Welcome everyone to episode 378 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. It is 5 p.m. on Saturday. We are not even 24 hours into free agency, and my God, did things escalate quickly, naturally, as soon as we stopped recording last night. So today we're going to go through, we will not have time to get to every single signing that's happened. I'm going to leave that off right off the bat. But we are going to hit on the biggest ones and break down, you know, whether we think they're good deals, bad deals, what it means for those teams. If we don't get to your favorite team today, we will get to them at some point. But again, there's just too much to discuss. Before we get into it, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are doing this episode live on Locker Room. So if you have the iOS platform, download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out with us and slander Gordon Hayward's contract live in person with us. Joining me today, as always, is someone who did not get paid $100 million more dollars than he deserved. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Thank you. It was going well until you reminded me that no one wanted to pay me that many money. So yeah. it's going well. I've been up. I went to bed at 7:30 in the morning. So good. It was great fun seeing a lot of Americans complain on Twitter about, oh, this is late. Like, yeah, shut up. It's been interesting. A lot of big numbers, a lot of big figures. Obviously, we're seeing Gordon Hayward sign for $120 million. Fred VanVleet stayed at a relatively fine contract, $85 million over 4 years. I thought he would get a little bit more. I really like that for both sides.
Yeah.
Gallo signed for a little over 60. Jeremy Grant, 60. Davis Bertans, 80. Joe Harris, 75. We'll definitely get to that one.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of contracts and situations that we need to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, our prediction going into free agency was that we wouldn't see a ton of money flying around because the free agent class was bad and there weren't that many teams with cap space. You could understand for a Joe Harris and a Marcus Morris, who we'll also get to, even Davis Bertans, where if a team's capped out and has bird rights, that's the one situation where you could see some overpays because they just didn't have an alternative if these guys walked away.
Right.
The one that just caught completely out of left field. Full disclosure, I have not really been online today. I had to rake my yard for the last time. I was going to do it yesterday, but we found what we thought was a rabid squirrel. So that interfered with those plans. So I knocked it out today, and I got a text from one of my buddies who is a Hornets fan, one of the few Hornets fans left on the planet. And he just, his exact text was, what? And I was like, uh-oh, what happened here? So I took a break and checked Twitter and saw Gordon Hayward signed with the Charlotte Hornets a 4-year, $120 million deal, Mort. And for them to make this work financially, they waived and stretched Nicholas Batum. So effectively, with the waive or the stretch, which is going to cost them $9 or $10 million for the next 3 years, plus Gordon Hayward $30 million a year. They're effectively paying Gordon Hayward, they're paying $40 million for the next 3 years for the right to have Gordon Hayward on their team.
Oh, Brian, so we you cut out a little bit, but if I'm to guess as to what you were saying, it's basically just Gordon Hayward / Hornet slander. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah. So where did you have him? Full disclosure, I said, before free agency, that I would actually not even feel comfortable giving him 4 years, 80. Like, that would probably be the most I would give, and even that would make me kind of cautious because he's 30 years old. He's had, the injury history. He got $40 million more than that. He's getting paid $30 million per year, and it's actually even more than that because of the stretch that you alluded to. So, yeah. Oh boy, this is I tweeted earlier here today, Hornets offseason that had that picture of a horse that's really well drawn to begin with,
and then it goes
worse and worse.
Yeah.
And just a shout out to Joshua Allen. Just don't worry, we'll put you in. We'll put you in. We just need to wrap this up, and then we'll get to the Danny Ainge slander. Don't worry, we'll have slander. So yeah, I think they started out so well. They drafted really well. Even last episode, I was very complimentary of Mitch Kupchak. I was like, hey, you know what? He seems to turn a corner. But I kind of forgot that when it's free agency, he reverts back to being slightly incompetent.
Slightly?
So, I'm trying to be nice. Okay, highly. Okay, yeah, let's go aggressive. Incompetent.
He's the same guy who handed out the Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov contract. Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not going to say the Hayward contract is going to age as poorly. But, look, I mean, Hayward had a good year last year. I don't want to say he's not a productive player. I think he's going to get the same treatment that Tobias Harris does from Philly fans, where it's like, because he is so wildly overpaid, people say, you know, talk about him like he's completely useless, and he's not. I mean, he is still a productive player. Given his age and his injury history, though, would you pay him $30 million a season?
Oh, no.
Right. God, no. So, you know, that's the problem. And for a Hornets team, like, look, you know, you're right. We said a lot of nice things about them after Wednesday, heading into Friday, getting LaMelo Ball, who a lot of people consider the number one overall prospect in the draft, getting him at number three, not, you know, resisting the pressure to trade up, for James Wiseman in particular. That was really good. And then they just pissed it all away. Because, like, what is Gordon Hayward expected to do? Like, what is the upside of giving Gordon Hayward this much money? Like, do you really envision yourself being anything more than the 7 seed in the East and getting slaughtered in the first round?
No. I don't think he goes there to win. I think he goes there to get a paycheck. So yeah. That's what it is. So I'm going to invite Joshua Allen onto the stage here because, you know, this is kind of connection to the Boston Celtics. And he wants to slander Danny Ainge. So Joshua, go ahead, man.
Man, I mean, again, this is all rumors and reported about the Miles Turner and McDermott contract. But even if there was a framework, even if it's just Miles Turner, and I know you had to match salaries to make it work, and like a lesser player, what are you doing? By asking for everything else under the sun, Horn, Oladipo, whatever, Lamb, whoever else he was asked to pick, you allowed Gordon Hayward and his camp to find more time to be able to work out this contract with the Charlotte Hornets, which is, I'm going to say it is a Timothy Mozgov throughout this type of deal. He's got injury history. He's going to get injured again. Mm-hmm. He chased the bag. I want to say I'm happy for him. You know, daddy's always happy. But I don't get where the Hornets come from. It doesn't move the needle. It doesn't. You think you're gonna be all of a sudden relevance because you got Alonzo Ball and Gordon Hayward? Maybe when he plays the Celtics, when they play the Pelicans, but nobody. Sorry about that. How ridiculous that contract is.
Yeah, no, I hate it for literally everyone involved.
Now where do you go from here with the Celtics? You took so long with this trade that there's really not many people left. You're already so up against the cap. I don't even think they have any cap room. I think they have the mid-level exception, maybe the taxpayers exception. They have a couple of trade exceptions from the Cantor and Poirier deals. Like, you don't have anything to upgrade your roster, and most of the guys are Marcus Smart in the deal and a sign and trade maybe for Bogan to add something there. Like, you still have a question mark at backup point guard, and it's now they go take the veteran minimum. They're going to go to place like the Nets, the Bucks, the Heat, who have all made huge strides to improve their roster in the offseason, and depending on what the Raptors do, I mean, this drops the Celtics potentially down to the sixth seed in the conference. I mean, you're looking at the Nets, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Heat, the Raptors. Depending on what they do, they're 5-6 when they could have been 2-3. So it's a baffling, head scratching move by Danny Ainge. See how they can and how they have done it.
I, you're not wrong. I could not have said that any better. It's hilarious. It's exactly what you would expect from Danny Ainge. You know, it wouldn't be an off season if he didn't almost trade for a star. And whether Miles Turner is the star, that probably stretches the definition. But you know, there was a report out. I think it was from the Boston Globe yesterday where you referenced. You know, they reportedly offered Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, and he countered with Miles Turner and Oladipo or T.J. Warren, which the Pacers rightly told him to go to hell. You know, the Celtics had no leverage here because, like, Mitch Kupchak is looming to overpay Gordon Hayward, and now they have nothing to show for him. And as you mentioned, I think all they have left is the biannual exception, the non-taxpayer mid-level. It's going to be really hard to find players at that price point to replace what Gordon Hayward brings to the table or even just round out the rest of the roster. So, you know, I'm loving it. I think it's hilarious, but it's a terrible move for both Boston and Charlotte. And honestly, it's a bad move for Gordon Hayward. Like, you just condemned yourself to mediocrity for the rest of your career. If you, like, cared about winning, like, I hate to frame it this way, but, like, he clearly prioritized money over winning, because if he actually cared about, you know, winning a championship, he would have chosen going to the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah. No, totally agree. Totally agree. It's bad. It's really bad. And here's the thing. There was kind of a buzz about this all the way going back to, I want to say, earlier in the season. So he could have traded him earlier, like at the deadline, for example. There was just so many ways that you could have changed the outcome of this entire situation, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're Danny Ainge, did you really expect him to opt out?
Maybe not opt out, no. I think he did, but eventually you still have to, you know, gauge the situation. And I don't think he did. And I think that's always, if Danny Ainge has one weakness, it's that. It's the fact that, like, he holds his cards a little bit too long instead of reacts. And I think that is something that he should take away from this situation is, oh, now I'm out an asset and I needn't be. This was avoidable. But yeah, so Gordon Hayward, it's awful contract for the Hornets. Bad position for the Celtics. So let's move on to something good, Brian. And before we do, Greg King asked a question here, which I thought was interesting. He said, the value of shooting and 3-and-D guys really showed in this free agency so far. Do you guys agree? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I don't even think I need to elaborate on that. Very, very much so. And then he asked if we think that Hayward would be effective for the Hornets. And I think he will. But, I mean,
yeah.
Not to $120 million.
Right. I mean, again, I think it's a Tobias Harris situation where if he's paid half as much and you send him to Charlotte, then it's like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Right.
This can actually be helpful. But now, you know, the problem with overpaying a guy like that is that it hamstrings your ability to build around him, especially when Devontae Graham's going to be up for a contract after this year. You know, Terry Rozier is on 18, 19-ish million per year. The Hornets' books were pretty clean. Like, we said this last episode, too. We're freaking out about whatever the hell the Detroit Pistons were doing, and we're going to get into them shortly. But when you're a bad rebuilding team, you should not be spending a ton of money on 30-year-old free agents who are not going to improve your long-term outlook at all.
Right.
Like, use that cap space to do what OKC is doing. OKC is rebuilding correctly. They are blowing apart their roster, and they own the next seven NBA drafts. It's just going to be OKC on the clock every single pick for the next 7 years. And, you know, it's like having that many swings at the bat. The draft is a crapshoot every year.
Yeah.
You don't know where those picks are going to land. For all we know, they could be every single one of those picks could be in the 20s. Probably not, but, you know, they could end up looking worse than they do right now. But, you know, they are trade chips in the meantime. And, like, hey, you know, who's to say they don't hit on one of those guys and get a Kawhi Leonard at 15, a Giannis Antetokounmpo at 15, a Rudy Gobert at 27? You know, that these draft day steals do happen in every class. So it's truly, I mean, you know, it speaks to why bad teams stay bad.
Yeah.
Doing moves like this.
I totally agree. Okay, Fred VanVleet. Let's smile for a second, because this was nice.
Yeah.
This was a good deal for both sides. Like, we heard yesterday, before this signing, that he was apparently it was a chatter about a 4-year contract worth $108 million. And
from the Knicks.
What was that, the Knicks? Okay, I see. That's where, you know, the last 24 hours have been a buzz for me. So I thought that was that might have been for the Raptors. But okay, if that's the Knicks, that makes a lot of sense. But you know, Knicks, Raptors, whichever team would have offered that, that's a ton of money. Like, obviously, it's not Gordon Hayward money, but it's a lot up there. And that would have made me feel queasy if I was the guy signing Fred VanVleet to that contract. 4 years and 85 is, like, right there where I want it. That is 21.25 million a year on average. I dig that. It's fine. Like, it's, you know, you and I, over the course of this season, we've been talking about VanVleet and his value, and that's sort of where we pegged it, right?
Yeah, and I don't remember who. I think here we go. It was Michael Grange of I think he's Sportsnet, right? His deal, so he's got a player option in year 4, which makes sense if you're getting him at that price point instead of higher. Absolutely give him that flexibility. Toronto should not be dinged for that, but it starts at 21.25 million, then decreases 8% next year before ramping up again. So that's going to help the Raptors have more cap space next summer. You know, as we've mentioned before, they're one of the presumed Giannis suitors or whoever else suitors. You know, Kyle Lowry comes off the books next summer as well. So, it's a polar opposite of a Charlotte. Like, this is what smart teams do. They structure their contracts such that they give themselves maximum flexibility when they need it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And, it cements the Raptors. We don't know what's going to happen with Ibaka or Gasol still. I think Mark Stein of the New York Times reported the Lakers are sniffing around Marc Gasol, which would be interesting. But I don't know how they could get him at this point because they spent the MLE on Montrezl Harrell. So,
well, Marc Gasol is 209 years old, so he might be willing to sign for the minimum.
I guess so. I mean, I hope not for his sake, or I hope the Raptors would be willing to bring him back at a little bit more money than that. But yeah, either way, I mean, having Fred VanVleet locked in for the next 3 years to grow with Siakam, OG Anunoby, regardless of what happens with Ibaka, Gasol, and then Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
Next summer, like, that Raptors team is gonna stay young, fun, good for a while now. I love it. Love it for both sides.
Love it for the Tampa Raptors. Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Correct. So let's stay in the South for a minute, Mort, because the Atlanta Hawks have been splashing around. They've made 3 moves so far. The big one, Danilo Gallinari, is signing their 3 years, $61.5 million. And then they are shoring up their backcourt. Chris Dunn, 2 years, $10 million, and Rajon Rondo, 2 years, $15 million.
Okay, so as I said earlier, not in this show, but on the podcast we recorded yesterday, when it comes to Danilo Gallinari, I love the fit there, but I do wonder about the longevity because he's 32. He'll be 33 next year. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't really align with Trae Young. Mm-hmm. That said, if he's just as effective as he's been for just 2 years out of that contract, fine. I'll take it. It's okay. I do wonder what this means for John Collins, but that's a topic we can talk about in a couple of minutes. Right now, I'm loving the fit there for now. You know, the pick and pop option, the fact that he can also function as a ball handler and initiate the offense, the fact that he rarely misses from the free throw line, like, Gallo is, and always has been, an all-star caliber player when he's been healthy. Like, he is supremely talented. So if you're getting that version, I don't see a big argument as to why Atlanta shouldn't be in the playoff context next season. Or this season. This season. We can say this season now, finally. Yeah.
Right. I'm with you. My coworker, Adam Fromal, who of Bleacher Report, he also is the owner of the NBA math website. You know, after all these moves, texted me today. He's like, is a second round ceiling, like, realistic for the Hawks next year? Mm-hmm. And my gut was like, no, they're not going to be one of Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Toronto, Miami, Philly, Boston. But then I'm like, well, who knows? Weird stuff could happen.
They could,
I don't know.
They could be, so, they could be Brooklyn.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I think it is, they're at least a legitimate, they should go into the season, you should expect them in the playoffs. Yeah. You know, I think they have the inside track at least for that 8 seed because, you know, the six teams I mentioned, Indiana is not going away unless who knows what happens with Oladipo. But, you know, the East, the top hierarchy is pretty well set up there. But, like, is Atlanta better than Washington, than this stupid Charlotte team? Orlando is just, yes. You know, running it back. Yeah, like, I think so. Gallo's really good.
I don't think you just need to think so. That's pretty obvious, right? Like the talent level?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, talk about Chris Dunn because you watched him with Chicago for the last few years. What do you think he's going to bring to the table in Atlanta?
I hate that you keep singling out Chicago. No, he's really, really bad offensively. Defensively, fantastic. Right. But the thing is here, you have to basically figure out a way to make him productive. So he finished at around the rim at 65% shooting, which was the first time over the course of his career that he's been efficient around the basket. Which, okay, but that doesn't really help anyone who needs to space out the floor. I mean, this is a guy who on multiple occasions have gotten wide open three-point shots from the corner. And I'm talking about wide open, like no one within like 20 feet. And he would airball shots. I mean, this is the type of shooter we're talking about. So for all the great defensive intensity that he provides, and that is definitely great. I mean, he is a 1-3 defender, long arms, very, very pesky, aggressive, just such a dog when it comes to defense. You have to wonder how many minutes can he give you if he is such an inept shooter that he just does not give you that spacing offensively. This is the NBA mm-hmm. in 2020. You can't really survive with him on the court anymore. If you're a perimeter player who can't shoot, you're a dinosaur.
Yeah. And what scares me is that, I mean, you bring in Rajon Rondo as well, where, again, you know, passing vision and just general basketball IQ should not be questioned, but I wouldn't want to rely on him for a ton of offense. So there are backcourt pairings in Atlanta that can make sense. Do I want to see a lot of Rajon Rondo, Chris Dunn lineups? Probably not.
I love how you struggle through that probably right there.
Yeah. Especially, you know, because Clint Capella is going to clog up your spacing already. Yep. So God forbid you put those three guys on the court together at one point.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like the pieces are there for Atlanta to be really fun next year. But it's going to, you know, this is on Lloyd Pierce, their head coach, to figure out which combinations of players work best. And then I'm right with you that, you know, when I saw that Gallo contract, which is like, look, value-wise, it's pretty reasonable. And don't think they'll have any problem trading him if that's, you know, if they do sign John Collins to an extension and, you know, a year or two down the road, they say, okay, Gallo, like, served his purpose. That's a pretty easy contract to flip, I think, and like should, you know, could help them in terms of salary matching if they're trying to trade for a star, because they have a lot of young guys that they could package in such a deal. But yeah, I mean, it does beg the question. I know, I forget exactly who from The Athletic, but someone tweeted last night that this doesn't affect how they're going to approach contract negotiations with John Collins. And you know, there are the reports from, I think it was Chris Kirshner, mm-hmm. Earlier in the spring, where, you know, John Collins sees himself as a max or a near max guy. And I would not blame Atlanta for not wanting to get up to that price. Right. So I think Gallo can be insurance if he, like, adamantly refuses to sign for less than that. But, you know, that's definitely a storyline to keep an eye on this next month, how those extension talks go, or whether Collins turns out to be expendable if his fit with Capella doesn't work well, or, you know, if they try him in a small ball five with Gallo, like sorting out those front court minutes, especially, you know,
Kobe was spent there the number as well.
Yeah. They spent the number six pick on a big as well. So like they have a lot of talent. It's mm-hmm. just, it's really going to be tricky for Lloyd Pierce, I think, to figure out which combinations of players work best together, and just how to get everyone to play enough minutes. Like, honestly, they have probably too many rotation players right now, which is a weird thing to say about a team that finished that poorly last year.
Yeah. You're very diplomatic about Rondo, so I won't beat around the bush. I think that's a horrible, horrible contract. I think it's a horrible acquisition. Horrible. Yeah. So yeah. $7.5 million a year for Rajon Rondo, who's going to be, what, 35 next year?
Is it? Have we seen details? Is there like a second year team option at least? Or
I don't care if there is. It's a bad. This is a minimum caliber player at this point. Even Vogt was like, oh, this shores up their defense, which further proves to me that as much as I love Vogt, he's not an analyst, because Rajon Rondo has not played defense in a long ass time. I'm really sorry, but this idea that players somehow maintain their defensive reputation throughout the course of the career, even though they pivot, some players pivot, like, hey, Russell Westbrook is still, by some fans, being brought up as an all defense kind of guy. Like, no, no. And Rondo, yeah, he's smart, but that's it. He's not a reliable shooter. He's not reliable at the three-point line. There was a reason that Lakers fans hated his guts, because the offense went in a tank whenever he stepped on the floor. He's no longer a net positive. Like, defensively even if that's where you go, like, he's not good. He'll give you assists. He'll give you some highlights here and there. Fine. But he's not good. I hated that contract for him. Hated it. Like, why would the Hawks do that? It's... And then, especially after signing Dunn. Like that, yeah.
I mean, I think it's the quintessential, like, we need veteran leadership in the locker room type thing.
Oh, like, sign Garrett Temple. The Bulls did it, but then beat them to the punch.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's like, I think in their ideal world, Rajon Rondo will mentor Trae Young like Chris Paul did with SGA in OKC last year. But... that's ignoring that Chris Paul is still a good basketball player, all-star, in fact. Where
also,
Rondo...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Rondo had a nice run in the playoffs there, but you said it well. We had Anthony Irwin on the podcast before the playoffs started, and you know it sounded like he wanted to inject bleach into anytime I brought up Rajon Rondo.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it's going to be a love-hate relationship with him in Atlanta, I think.
Here's the thing as well, which I find funny. Hey, I'm going to mentor you, Mr. 30-point, 10-assist guy. Like, what? Like, what exactly are you going to bring to the table here? Well, I bring defense. You haven't played defense in about 7 years. Well, I bring smarts. Yeah, this dude is averaging 10 assists per game and reads the floor like a fucking savant. Like, well, exactly... are you hoping to? Oh, I'm going to make him a pro. Yeah, he's an all-star. I'm pretty sure he's got it handled, guy. Like, no.
Yeah,
not seeing it.
Of their three moves, it's my least favorite of the three.
Yeah.
But I really do think they're certainly, we have Jesse Matarazzo asking, is this putting them in the playoff picture? I think the combination of all they've did this offseason,
yeah.
I think they are at least a legit playoff contender next year.
Yeah.
So I like the overall offseason for the Hawks. Not crazy about the Rondo deal, but big picture, I like it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I cannot say the same for the Detroit Pistons, who, as we were recording yesterday, those were a couple of the first deals that came out. Mason Plumlee to the Pistons, then Jahlil Okafor, who I think it was ended up being a minimum deal, which is fine, but like still, I don't know why you need 16 centers on your roster. Then later last night, we find out that they're assigning Jeremy Grant to a 3-year, $60 million deal. Uh-huh. The thing that caught me especially by surprise, and our friend TJ McBride, he worked for Mile High Sports right now, but he's going to need a new job soon. So if you are listening and you have a sports website, you should please hire TJ, because he's really good and knows the Nuggets very well. He's the one who broke the news that the Nuggets offered Jeremy Grant the same contract, 3 years, $60 million, but Detroit offered him a bigger role, so he wanted to go to Detroit.
I mean, look, next season, or again, I keep saying next season, this season, eventually, if players such as Gordon Hayward and Jeremy Grant, you know, begin to chirp and say, well, mm-hmm. I'm on a bad team, I will have no sympathy whatsoever because they chose bad situations. This is, you know, he had, Jeremy Grant, that is, a chance to stay with a one of the great playoff teams in the Western Conference, a championship contender, and with the same money, no less. And he says no because I presume he wants to take more shots, which, okay, I'm not really... I don't think he's that guy anyway, but all right, like, fair enough. But then you lost your right to complain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it, you know, if Hayward is getting paid $40 million more in Charlotte than he is anywhere else, I get it. Like, you know, take the money, sure. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, if Denver and Detroit are offering you the same amount of money, I think you said it well. It's like a guy who... Okay, he wants to take more shots, but should he be? Like,
no.
You know, if you're Jeremy Grant, you should know your role in the NBA and know that you aren't ever going to be a superstar. And that's okay. You're getting paid $20 million a year. Like, you don't need to be a superstar. Your role is very valuable, especially on that Nuggets team. Yeah. But you're going to be overextended. And, like, sure, you might put up... You know, he'll probably have a career best year in terms of numbers because Detroit's going to suck.
Yeah.
But, you know, what does that get you other than you're still getting paid the same amount of money? Your offseason's just going to start 2 or 3 months earlier than it would have.
I don't get this either. And here's the thing. I know that NBA Twitter just went crazy about, like, the Jeremy Grant love during the playoffs. And it's not that I didn't see it. I totally agree that he had just a fantastic playoff run. But this dude has weaknesses. And I think this is one of those situations where a team kind of fell too much in love with someone. I don't think he is that $20 million a year player. I realize that Detroit fans are... Detroit fans are pushing back on that a lot. And that's fair. They're optimistic about their signing. They're happy about their guy because they get someone in who is legitimately good. Being good, though, doesn't necessarily mean that you're worth, you know, automatically $20 million a year. And I don't think he's that guy. I think when you and I brought him up, we kind of settled at somewhere along the lines of $16 million per year.
Yeah, it was like 15 or 16. Yeah. And he could be worth that much money, but in the right role.
Right.
Like, if you're Denver and you're capped out and you have no way to replace him if he leaves... Then sure, pay him however much you need to retain him. That makes sense. But, you know, it goes back to what we said with Charlotte. Like, if you're Detroit and you're in the very early stages of a rebuild, yes, he's the type, like the archetype of player that you should be targeting at power forward. So good job. You at least identified the right type of player. But what is he going to give you these next few years other than making you slightly more respectable but still hellaciously bad?
Like, yeah, no, you're right. It was a good way of putting that one. I like that. Yeah, you're right. Not much.
I don't get it at all. I will say this for Denver, though. I mean, you know, when he left, Nuggets Twitter got into just an immediately bleak place because they realized, like, crap, our offseason really hinged on re-signing him. But the Nuggets, I think, pivoted pretty well. They re-signed Paul Millsap to a one-year deal worth $10-plus million, according to Shams Charania of The Athletic. Also got Jamichael Green, 2 years, $15 million.
Yeah.
Now, Jamichael Green is not Jeremy Grant. Jeremy Grant is a better player than him. But Jamichael Green can fill some of the same role that Jeremy Grant did. Like, it's not... such a downgrade that I'm like removing the Nuggets from the Western Conference playoff picture.
I would agree with that.
So, I mean, you know, I think it sucks to lose Jeremy, but I think they pivoted about as well as they possibly could have, especially given, you know, some of the cuckoo bananas numbers that some of these other guys are signing for.
Totally agree on that.
Let's go to the team that knocked them out of the playoffs, Mort. The Lakers just keep on getting better. They got Schroeder in the trade on ahead of the draft. They got Wes Matthews last night. And they're also shot across the bow, the Staples Center bow. Montrezl Harrell, 2 years, $19 million with a second-year player option, according to Brian Windhorst of ESPN. They are taking him from the crosstown Los Angeles Clippers. I was surprised by the reaction to this deal because I thought it was just a home run for that price, but it seemed more polarizing than I expected. What do you think about it?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you because Clippers fans were having a party when they saw this. I mean, it was like, yes, and he goes to the Lakers. This is the best outcome ever. Clippers fans are very down on Trez. And, you know, you and I are part of a certain DM group where we get some stuff. We get some inside info, to put it bluntly. And the thing that we continuously heard back was, oh yeah, Trez was a problem. Like, in the locker room. not in the, oh, that guy's a problem. No, like a legitimate problem in the locker room.
Right.
In the sense that, you know, the chemistry issues that were on the Clippers' shoulders this past season very much was connected to Trez. So for the Clippers, I think it's interesting because you still have the primary core there of the good players, at least. So if you suddenly have removed your locker room issue, what does that mean for them next year? Are they better? Is this addition by subtraction? Like, I don't even know.
I mean, it could be, but, like, look, Montrez had a horrible playoffs, right. And he cost himself probably, I mean, based on what Jeremy Grant just got, he probably cost himself $40 million, yeah. Which sucks. But at the same time, like, he's the sixth man of the year for a reason, right? Like, that second unit attack with Lou Williams and Montrez was indefensible for most of the season.
Yeah, it worked.
And the Clippers, like, as, you know, as dispiriting as their end of the season was, they were up 3-1 in that series, and they were up in Game 5 by double digits. Like, I'm wondering if they're overreacting a little bit, because, like, 2 years, $19 million is not that much. I'm flabbergasted that they didn't match that price or offer even more. Maybe they did and he just wanted out.
Yeah.
But for, you know, for him to go to the Lakers especially is just a huge FU to the Clippers. And, you know, the Lakers lost Dwight Howard. He's signing a 1 year deal with the Sixers, so they needed a replacement backup center. And, you know, Montrez's issues did get exposed in the playoffs to some extent. I don't know how much the Lakers will necessarily want to lean on him in certain matchups. But at the same time, like, I could easily see him replicating what he had with Lou Williams with Dennis Schroeder. Like, a Schroeder-Montrez pick and roll as the second unit. Like, you know, we were always worried last year, who's the Lakers' third best player? I'm not worried about that anymore. No. They have LeBron, AD, and then also Schroeder and Montrez. Like, that's going to be a very good offense regardless of, even when LeBron, in the non-LeBron, non-AD minutes, like, Schroeder and Montrez can keep that second unit afloat. Right.
Oh, poor Kyle Kuzma, who keeps getting pushed down on the pecking order.
Yeah, he might not be long for this Lakers world, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
No, but I agree with you. Contractually, that's a good deal, and then you can sort of work it out. If he becomes a problem, the contract is so low, you can flip him, so...
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely an upgrade for them in just in terms of raw talent. You know, they will have a very potent offense coming into the season, that's for sure. And it's probably a little bit difficult to, you know, if you really look at the NBA overall, and if you're going to try to find a team that should, you know, decrown them, I think that's going to be a hard task.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten substantially better. And, you know, I think the Clippers, by virtue of losing Montrez, got worse. They did get Luke Kennard on draft night, which was
right. Nice.
So I don't want to... And, like, they somehow just got 4 second-round picks in that deal. So it was some sort of wizardry in which they got all the picks. So that was nice. But, you know, Denver losing Jeremy Grant, like, again, Jermichael Green is good and it's going to stem the bleeding. But I think Denver got worse. So, yeah, I mean, you could argue the Lakers' lead over the rest of the West you know, with especially with Klay Thompson and the Warriors now looking less like a legit threat than they did a couple days ago. I think the Lakers got better, and a lot of the other top threats in the West have gotten worse.
Yeah, there's a step now. There's a step.
Yeah, so let's go to the Clippers, because they let Montrez walk, but they re-signed Marcus Morris to 4 years, $64
million. Yeah.
What did you think of that?
Well, first and foremost, I got some red cheeks, because you and I were talking about Marcus Morris a couple months ago, and we were like, what is he going to get? Well, you know, he's kind of a problem in the locker room. You and I kind of settled that it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that he would get a minimum contract. Whoops. We were off by approximately $62
million. Yeah.
No, this is a bad deal. I don't like it. I think that's just horrendous. It's $60 million a year for Marcus Morris. I am not getting the Marcus Morris vibe here. I'm really not. I think he is laughing all the way to the bank. I think he is living more off of reputation than actual impact. And I think he's a major liability in the playoffs, because you saw what he did to Luka twice and with other players. Like, this is a guy, if you rely on him and he does dumb stuff like this and gets himself thrown out, not just of a game, but maybe suspended, then what? Then he could be the sole reason, theoretically, that you'd lose a playoff series. And you're paying $16 million a year for that? Hell no. No. I'm not with that. Not saying necessarily the minimum contract, because apparently we were very, very wrong on that one. But $16 million? No. Not there. Not there.
It's the years more than the size of the contract that bother me. Yeah. If you did 1 year, $16 million, that's fine. But knowing that Kawhi and Paul George can leave after next year if things really go belly up, and that you're going to be tied to Marcus Morris for three more years with God knows what else, I mean, that's what would make me nervous looking at the Clippers' long-term trajectory. But again, this is one of those instances where they did not have a way to replace him if he left. They had his bird rights, so they were going to almost have to overbid to keep him. Mm-hmm. You know, I would argue the same happened with Joe Harris in Brooklyn. 4 years, $75 million. That's a lot for Joe Harris, who I like a lot. But
I was getting there too. You know,
yeah, that's a lot of cheddar for Joe Harris.
It is. It's too much cheddar. That's where you take the burger back to the waiter and go, right, you know what? I can't eat there. There's no beef. It's just cheese. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. It's almost $20 million a year. Almost.
Yeah.
For a guy who, look, is a great shooter. I'm not going to dispute that. Great shooter. Surprisingly adept rebounder also, I want to say. But that's where it goes away. Like, after that, there's a significant drop-off to whatever third skill is his best. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know what the hell that is. What is his third best skill?
Can you just list shooting three times? Is that right? Not?
Yeah. I mean, again, shooting is valuable. Very, very valuable. I get that. But to this point, for a guy who is on the cusp of being one-dimensional, that's... I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does, to credit, double-checking who said this earlier. Yeah, Greg King, in our discussion, you know, asking about the value of 3-and-D guys, it speaks to how highly the market values that type of player, and Miami has to be looking at that, knowing Duncan Robinson's coming up for a deal next year.
Yeah, but he said 3-and-D.
Duncan Robinson, you know, is going to look at Joe Harris and say, all right, that's my baseline.
Yeah, that's true. That is
true. It does not bode well for any team that was hoping to retain a sharpshooter. But hey, Seth Curry signed for three more years and only $8 million a pop. So pretty psyched about that one.
So
let's go.
I was just saying, if we're going to Washington next.
That's what I was
saying. All right, then lead ahead, brother.
Well, I was just going to say, Davis Bertans, 5 years, $80 million. You know, this is one that I actually value-wise feel good about, but given the news that leaked shortly thereafter, I am now nervous again because Shams tweeted that John Wall officially wants out of Washington, which, you know, the only correct reaction to that is the Taken meme of Liam Neeson saying good luck. if you weren't on one of the worst contracts in the NBA, it would be easier to get you out of Washington. Alas, we have reached the dilemma. But what do you think? I mean, with Wall and Beal drama notwithstanding, what do you think of Bertans 5 years 80?
So, you know, you can sort of say, you can sort of apply the same analysis that we did with Joe Harris to Davis Bertans because he's also, you know, a shooter. Primarily. Mm-hmm. The thing about Bertans, which is different than Joe Harris, in my opinion, is the fact that he can create his own shots to a much higher extent. He's a guy who can take and make shots with significantly more difficulty on them. Like, the way that he shoots the ball is practically insane. Like, he'll come off double screens, he'll catch the ball, he'll basically sling his entire body away from the basket, and that shot, which should be impossible, would be all net. I mean, if you are someone who hasn't watched Davis Bertans play a whole lot, go back and watch, I don't remember the date, but it was Washington against Charlotte. In Charlotte, he went off big time. And just go watch, like, the level of difficulty he shoots with. It's just insane. So when you have a guy like that, who's such a volatile shooter, who is so versatile that at 6'10", you can basically run him through screens like a shooting guard, you are getting something more from the, you know, you're getting more value for the buck than you are a 6'7", 6'8" Joe Harris. You know, here you have a guy who is long, has a very high release point. You know, you can use him theoretically in every conceivable offense. And in the playoffs, he should be just as functional because, again, this doesn't boil down to him not being able to get a shot off. So I love it. It's also cheaper than Joe Harris's contract. Bertans is earning $16 million a year, just 1 year more than Marcus Morris. So he and Morris are on the same salary of $16 million per year, but it's just 1 year more for Bertans. I love that. I think it's fair value. I think he is one of the great shooters that we have in our league right now. And he plays a position of need. He is somewhat of a positionless player, I think, which also just fits the modern day NBA. And if you have a ball dominant guy alongside him, that's only going to make him even more dangerous. So I dig it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the deep shooting range, I think, is what separates him from some of the other. And I don't have the stat pulled up exactly in terms of, I know he led the league in terms of field goal percentage on shots. I think it was from 28 feet or beyond. Yeah. Shot like almost 50% from that range, which is just outrageous. You know, the gravity that he's responsible for, that, you know, teams have to guard him out to that range, which opens up lanes for his teammates. So we'll see what happens with the rest of Washington. But, you know, I think if nothing else, he could be either a nice building block for them moving forward. I know he's a little bit older, but, you know, he's not going anywhere, or if they do decide to blow this thing up, trade Wall, trade Beal, $16 million a year for a guy like that's pretty tradable as well.
And he's 28. So, like, it's not, you know, we had this tendency of saying he was a little bit older, and that's because he started his career late. Like, he was 24 or something when he came into the league. You know, it's so we always have a tendency to, with guys who come into the league in their mid-20s, we kind of assume sometimes they're a bit older than they are, but he just turned 28. Like, he's fine. He's fine. The length of that contract, he'll be, what, 33 when it ends, or close to 33 when it ends. Like, that's good. He's a shooter anyway. Like, that should prolong his efficiency and his career anyway. So I'm not worried.
That is fair. So let's go to what I can only assume is one of your favorite value contracts of free agency so far. Christian Wood with the Houston Rockets, 3 years, $41 million.
Oh boy! So, it was initially reported to be $27 million. Yeah, that was fun because then suddenly Shams was like, "Oh, hold up! someone
that
is
was
renegotiating."
Fun because it was I mean, that was Frank Isola of New York
something.
yeah, New York Daily News, New York Post, one of the whatever. But yeah, it was like, okay, well, Detroit just handed Mason Plumlee 3 years, $25 million. So if they just let Christian Wood walk for 3 years, $27 million, really the difference in $2 million for over a 3 year span was what led you to go. So at 3 years, $41 million at least makes that decision. I'm lying. They're still dumb for letting him walk at that price, but right. For Houston, that's great. That's a phenomenal value. I think
I would agree. I would agree. And Houston now are back in the game of having big men.
Yeah, and like, look, I mean, we know there's been a lot of trade talk and vultures surrounding them with James Harden in particular. Russell Westbrook wants out. They're saying we're not going to trade these guys. They're going to hold out for an offer that they deem acceptable, which they should. You should not trade James Harden for less than what the Pelicans got for Drew Holiday, for instance. But so if they do go into training camp and go into the season without making a big trade, Christian Wood will fit really well with James Harden. Like, you know, he had a career best year last year with Derrick Rose and nothing else. Like, Houston has talent still, despite giving away Covington. So I'm actually really intrigued to see how he pairs with Russ and how he pairs with Harden. Because in theory, like, the skill set, he's just springy, rim-rolling big. Like, that's going to be fantastic.
Who can pop, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's, like, you know, Clint Capella was a good pick-and-roll partner for Harden. He was very limited offensively. Christian Wood is much more versatile than what Clint Capella was. So, like, this could work out very well. And, you know, for all of the jokes we've made at Houston's behalf over the past few days and weeks, you know, for all we know, they're right back into the playoff mix as long as they don't blow this thing up.
Well, I mean, even then, like, good luck to Christian Wood on collecting those $41 million because it's still Tillman Fertitta.
That's true. Yeah, I wonder if there's like a, if your team owner goes bankrupt, is there a clause in your contract saying... That is a fair point. Let's go to Utah more, because they made two moves. One, re-signing Jordan Clarkson, 4 years, $52 million. And then Derek Favors, according to Tony Jones of The Athletic, is going back there, 3 years, $27 million, which seems to be the full mid-level exception. What'd you think of those two moves?
So I think Clarkson was... It's okay. I probably wouldn't have gone that steep. But he's so young that I'm okay with it. He really showed me something offensively. And look, this is just the price of having offensive players. So I get it. It's a little big, but it's so you know what? So many other scorers are getting significantly more money. So I'm not gonna look at that and going, oh, that is highly unacceptable. It's fine. Derek Favors is the one that's interesting to me because I actually think it's good value. I know Twitter disagrees with me on that one because they were like, why would you give Derek Favors 3 years, 27? Because he's a damn good basketball player. That's why. Like, he is a tough-nosed defender. He's a great rebounder. He understands, like, the organization because he used to be there. And here's one thing that I think we have not discussed. He would make a pretty fantastic Rudy Gobert replacement.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm wondering. Yeah. That because the Favors-Gobert lineups didn't tend to work all that well.
Right.
When they played. I mean, it's, you know, Derek Favors spent most of his career in Utah. This is, we know, you know, most of the time we have to, like, try to just conceptually imagine how will Al Horford pair with Joel Embiid? And then we see it on the court like, oh, it's terrible. Yeah. We know Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert lineups aren't that effective offensively. So did they spend $9 million just to have a credible backup center? Possibly. And then, you know, play these guys sparingly together? Possibly. But, yeah, I'm wondering if this is insurance in case Gobert prices himself out. Like, if he holds out for a supermax and they're like, dear God, no. At least you could have Derek Favors as a pretty credible backup center option for, or, you know, a starting center option, I guess, in 2021 and beyond. And you'll still have him under contract for 2 years, $9 million a year. It's not too bad.
It's not. I think that's exactly the logic. I mean, you know, or maybe they're just thinking proactively and going, hey, you know what? If we flip Rudy right now, it the value is good. Like it's like we might actually be able to optimize our return from him if we move him now. Like, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly possible, especially given all that's happened this offseason so far. What do you think, Malik Beasley re-signing Minnesota, 4 years, $60 million?
I like it.
Value-wise, I get it. I'm just confused what Minnesota is doing. Having brought in Rubio, you still have D'Angelo Russell, you just spent the number one overall pick on Anthony Edwards, and now, like, do you think this is one of those situations where they re-signed him to trade him later?
I definitely think that's a possibility, yes. More likely, I think they are considering moving some of the other guys who doesn't really have offensive games. You know, Jared Culver, I think they need to give another chance. Josh Okogie, like, maybe they're considering warming up to the idea of moving him. I really don't know. Like, overall, I think Minnesota has had a weird, weird offseason. But this one, I kind of like, because Beasley, he's highly athletic. We saw what he can do when he kind of upped his three-point shooting. You know, he's a high-volume three-point shooter with high efficiency, great release point. To me, the question is, can he dedicate himself as a defender? Because he's not going to be a guy who's going to get like 14, 15, or even 16 shot attempts per game. So he's going to be one of those, you know, 10, 11 kind of shots per game, if that. And that just tells me that it's going to be mostly as a spot-up shooter or off of opportunistic cuts. Fine. That's great. Like, that's good. That should also allow him to have plenty of energy to assert himself defensively. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for him to basically look at Culver and Okogie and go, hey, you know what? These guys are struggling to get minutes because they're not offensively potent. I am. Mm-hmm. So for me to really establish myself here, I got to put in the work defensively. I want to be the thing that those two guys cannot be, which is a two-way player. So for him, that's what I'll be looking for.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, maybe Minnesota saw the success that OKC had with those three-guard lineups with CP3, SGA, and Schroeder. And, you know, maybe they are going to try stuff out like that, like a Rubio, D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, a small, you know, very small lineup. I don't know which guy defensively it's going to hemorrhage points, but you could say that about Minnesota as a team in general.
So you're starting Anthony Edwards on the bench?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I'm curious to see like how this all plays out. Because, look, the value, I think, is fine, especially if the version that we saw in Minnesota, I mean, what, he averaged almost 20 points a game,
almost 21, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a very, very limited sample, a 14-game sample size, so I don't want to overreact here. But, I mean, the talent is there. I think $15 million is a fine price point. But, yeah, I'm just wondering how you divvy up those minutes between those four guys and if one of them will eventually get traded. But, look, you know, I think they gave up a first-round pick to get him, so I don't blame them for, you know, you might say it's a sunk cost and you could have let him walk, but I don't think that price point, unless he just absolutely tanks, is going to make him untradeable if they decide to
go that route. I agree. He should have plenty of trade value over the next 4 years. That is not the contract that I'm more worried about whatsoever, or player there. But it does feel like there's another shoe dropping at some point for this Minnesota roster.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to Portland more, because I know you and I are both high on what they've done this offseason. Started with bringing in Robert Covington. They re-signed Rodney Hood, 2 years, $21 million. The second year is not guaranteed, according to Woj. They also are bringing back Carmelo Anthony. This news just came out within the last hour, so I don't know that we've seen the financial details yet, but I'd assume it's probably going to be for a minimum. And they got your boy, Derek Jones Jr., 2 years, $19 million.
They did.
And they also traded for Enes Kanter. So this Portland team is looking, I mean, someone tweeted out their updated depth chart last night, and this was even pre-Melo. They look good.
They look really good.
Conceptually, it makes a lot of sense. And, like, I don't think this is the 8 seed next year. I'll say that much.
And they might get better.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of their guys are young enough that you could easily see. Like, I don't think they're going to get substantially worse, barring injuries. I mean, they had, you know, Nurkic is going to be hopefully healthy the whole year. And, you know, Derek Jones Jr. is young enough, I think, especially in a bigger role, you could see him take a big step forward. Dame is still Dame.
Well, I was talking about external upgrades because, as I heard and as I reported on Twitter yesterday, they might actually be getting Kai Bowman. They have at least shown interest, so there is mutual interest there. So we'll see if they act on that. He is on the waiver wire right now, so teams could theoretically pick him up, which then would not give them a chance to get him. So we'll see what happens after he clears that. But that is a tough-nosed defensive guard with an improving jump shot. So if he comes in there, you know, he'll actually give Anfernee Simons significant competition at practice to win that backup spot behind Dame. So I think everything is really coming up well from Portland. You just alluded to their youth. Like, Simons is there. Nasir Little is there. You know, Zach Collins is still there. Now they got Derek Jones Jr. They have Gary Trent Jr. Like, this team is ready to rock, Brian, and I couldn't be more excited on their behalf.
Yeah, I totally agree there. I want to shout out Phoenix, too. Jay Crowder for 3 years. Shams reported it as $30 million. I'm going to guess it's a little lower than that. I think it's just going to be the full non-taxpayer mid-level.
Yeah, so 27.
But, yeah, somewhere in that range. But, I mean, we saw the value Jay Crowder brought to Miami throughout the playoffs. Like, this Phoenix team is going to be really fun next year, if nothing else.
I would agree. I think this is... this is kind of insurance, I think, for Cam Johnson. If he doesn't deliver to the extent that they hope, then you can just plug in Jay Crowder. But I love the depth now for Phoenix. They're all into making this work. If only Robert Sarver hadn't furloughed some of his his people and forced them to go down 20% in salary, then I would be actively rooting for him.
That is true. Well, luckily, all of the vaccine science coming out would suggest that things will be getting back to some semblance of normalcy by middle of 2021. So all of these teams that are being very cheap right now only have a few more months to do so before they have even less of an excuse to do it than they do already. So that is a one silver lining here. Let's wrap up with a few of the top contenders in the East, because Miami, after losing Jay Crowder, I guess before losing Jay Crowder technically, brought in Mo Harkless on a one-year $3.6 million deal, which we believe is just the biannual exception. Yeah. Also got Avery Bradley, 2 years, $11.6
million. Yeah. I mean, what do you say about
that? This team's better, right? I mean, look, Crowder is a big loss for them. I don't want to downplay that. He was really, really good for them. It's similar to what we were talking about earlier with Denver, where, like, going from Jeremy Grant to Jamichael Green is a downgrade. Going from Jay Crowder to Mo Harkless is a downgrade. But Mo Harkless is still a good basketball player, and he will fill a lot of the same role that he did that Jay Crowder did. Like, I don't think Jay Crowder had like an outlier shooting performance for most of the playoffs. I don't think you could bank on that moving forward. But like, just having a versatile switchy wing who can knock down threes on occasion, yeah, he can do that. And then Avery Bradley, like, God, they're going to have just such an annoying defense next year with Avery Bradley, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Iguodala there as well. Oh, it is not going to be fun to play that
Miami. Mo Harkless as well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Avery Bradley is like, he's the most Miami player not to have played with Miami yet. So I like that fit there. He was on my list of targets for the Sixers, and I'm bummed to see him end up with Miami in particular. Same applies DJ Augustine going to Milwaukee, 3 years, $21 million. They also got Bobby Portis. I actually saw it reported as 2 years, $7.5 million, which again, I'm assuming is the biannual exception here. Augustine, I thought, like, every team wanted, you know, every fan base I saw going into free agency wanted DJ Augustine, so I thought he was just, like, the token Dwayne Dedman, where, you know, everyone thought he was going to sign for the MLE, or he was going to take their MLE, and then he ended up getting way overpaid. But I like this price. 3 years, $21 million is not bad value for him, especially for that Milwaukee team after making that Drew Holiday trade. They really needed a backup point guard.
Yeah, they did. And he's a shooter. He's not bad at facilitating. He's reliable from the free throw line. He's a low mistake type of player. You know, and the thing is, he can also play off the ball. So when Giannis goes into his isolation ideologies, you know, he's a guy who can spot up on the wing. And you know who can also do that? Bobby Portis. I mean, Bobby Portis is a surprisingly good shooter. He played with New York last year, so that he didn't really get a chance to showcase that. But he's a good shooter. So they got two guys at vastly different positions that can help them spread the court. And for Portis, he's just one of those instant offense type of guys who can also get you rebounds. Like, he's, you know, in limited minutes, he can actually give you like 10 and 5. So that there is a bump up in production off the bench now that wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if Bobby Portis, what is it, 2 years, $30 million, like a second-year team option, so effectively 1 year, $15 million with the Knicks last year,
right?
That was a massive overpay.
Of course.
Bobby Portis at less than $4 million a year to be your backup center now that Robin Lopez is with the Wizards, I like it.
Yeah.
You know, he's versatile enough to play both positions, but I'm thinking he's probably going to be their backup five. And, like, as you said, he can knock down threes. I mean, he can give them kind of a weird small ball look. Like, they're not going to have a seven-footer on the floor at all times, but I think they're probably okay with that. Like, I'm intrigued to see what happens here. I mean, I feel like since this Bogdan Bogdanovic deal fell apart, a lot of basketball Twitter has been dunking on the Bucks, and rightfully so. But especially after these two signings, I think we're all underrating, like, the Bucks have also gotten better this offseason.
Yeah. Significantly so.
Right? I mean, like, yeah, like, they lost Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, Ersan Ilyasova. They're bringing in Drew Holiday, DJ Augustine, Bobby Portis. That's an upgrade.
I think it is. Yes. It's certainly something that they can point to and go, well, we got better. Question is that enough? Time will tell, but that is the overall question we'll walk right now. This is all about getting back Giannis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are now more than 24 hours into him being able to sign his extension, and he still hasn't. It's not to say that he won't, but the more time that goes by, the louder that silence gets.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. And, yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. Is it enough to keep up with, you know, this upgraded Lakers team or what I think is an upgraded Miami team? I don't know. But, you know, Boston, I would argue, got weaker, at least so far.
Right.
Losing Hayward for nothing, which is hilarious. You know, Toronto hasn't made a major upgrade. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with the Nets and the Sixers. The Nets are just going to be a chemistry experiment. And, you know, the Sixers, they brought in Dwight Howard at the one-year vet min after he announced he was returning to the Lakers earlier that night, which is just a spectacular. It's like the most Dwight Howard thing you could possibly imagine.
Of course it is.
He tweets that he's going to the Lakers, deletes the tweet, and then signs to the Sixers an hour later. If you missed this entertaining experience, Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports has a good story about it. You just thought he had a deal on a $1 million contract. He thought they had an agreement. No, they did not. So then, yeah, I guess Maury and Embiid both recruited him pretty hard, so that they brought him in. And, like, look, considering the type of money that was thrown out last night, I'm fine with that at a one-year vet min. Like, they really needed a backup center after Al Horford, after trading Al Horford. So, you know, is Dwight Howard like the stretchy small ball five that you would ideally pair with Ben Simmons? No. But do you need an insurance policy in case or inevitably when Joel Embiid misses 15 to 20 games?
Yeah.
Yes. And Dwight Howard can be that player.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it's Dwight. I think it's we've reached that point where because he won a ring with the Lakers and because he was a Laker, you know, everything he does is under the microscope where I just like, it's just Dwight. Like, he's fine at being, you know, a rim protector, you know, a garbage man. That's it. Like, I don't right. really, as a player, I just don't have a high opinion on him anymore. Like, he's older. He's clearly not what he used to be. Like, he's a good rebounder, and that's it. So I agree. He can come in. He should be a starter if Embiid goes down, I think. I don't think he'll be good enough to carry that responsibility for 30 minutes, but if it's for a few games, okay. Extended time, I'd probably do something else, but yeah, you know, it's fine as a backup. It's fine as him just having to start for a game or whatever. But yeah, my opinion of him is pretty much set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know I think it was Scoop B who reported that Embiid and Dwight Howard could play together. Embiid could be a power forward at times.
Don't you dare bring up that name on this podcast. I will not have people like that brought up here.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Daryl Morey is not starting either one of those guys at power forward, or he's not going to let Doc Rivers do it. Because
the report came from effing Scoop B, which, yes.
right. Yeah, Dwight Howard's entire role is played however many minutes a night Joel Embiid is not on the floor. You know, Morey, after the draft, was even talking about some unconventional lineups with no center on the floor when Joe is off, so I think we are going to see more of that. You know, Mike Scott was like surprisingly effective at the five last year, so it would not surprise me if they end up keeping Mike Scott if we get a little bit of that as well. But like, Dwight is just Embiid insurance, but they didn't spend $109 million on it, so I'm good with it. I'll live with the fart jokes if they're not spending nine figures. That's where I'm at.
I think that's fair.
Any other big signings that you want to hit on, Mort?
No, not really. Well, I mean, there are a couple that I think we should talk about at a later date, because I'm sure that we can get something going about talking about De'Aaron Fox's 5-year max extension, for example. I want to touch on Jakob Poeltl at some point, De'Anthony Melton, but I have a feeling that we're going to get more news tonight and a little bit tomorrow, so we might be recording tomorrow as well, depending on what happens. But I want to save some of that for our next episode.
That is fair. Yeah, I mean, the market is drying up quickly, but we do still have Bogdan Bogdanovic is still floating out there. We still have Hassan Whiteside, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka.
We have a huge trade that might go into seven teams.
Right, yes. Yeah, we'll get into... We did not talk about Steven Adams going to New Orleans today since it is still being finalized, but seems like that is happening. There's the three-team deal.
With Jrue Holiday, like that deal, that's their expanding.
Yeah. And naturally, they're getting picks because, of course, they are.
No, it's great.
I'm just going to... I will end on this note. For anyone who talked trash about the 76ers in the early process era, I hope you have that same energy about this year's Thunder team, because they have traded all of their players except for SGA for more picks, and I want to hear them called a godless abomination at some point, just like Deadspin called the Sixers. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm gonna claim some Midwest bias is slanting coverage positively for OKC. But look, I like what they're doing, but it's just objectively hilarious. I could not name who is on the Oklahoma City Thunder roster other than SGA and Lou Dort right now. I have no idea.
Darius Bazley.
Okay, there you go. Other than that, we'll find out in a week.
Hamidou Diallo is still there, right?
Is he? I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I think it's, so. But you're right.
They've traded half their team.
Yeah, they have. They have. It's a complete new look here this season. And look, training camp is right around the corner, so they'll need to figure something out.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, we'll keep an eye out on the latest. But in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handle in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we did this one live on Locker Room. So if you are on an iOS device, please download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out with us. And as you heard, you can even chime in today. Slander Danny Ainge, which I will always, always approve of. So yeah, check out the Locker Room app on iOS. And they're working on developing an Android version as well for people on Android devices. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, please, God, go to sleep before 7:30 a.m. today.
Yeah, it's a little over midnight now, so it might behoove me to actually hit the hay for a change.
Yeah. I promise you, I'll DM you with the big deals, but yeah, just go to sleep.
Okay, okay. So when I wake up tomorrow, I'll have like 70 DMs from you.
I said the big deal. Okay. The board's drying up.
That's true.
I got Bogdan, and that's about it. Fair Serge enough. Ibaka, that's fine.
I'll live with that. Yeah. Okay. Well, talk to you soon, and don't die, man.
Thank you.